darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media
and the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors, even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Hamilton Corner. My name is Abraham Hamilton III. I am the host of the program. Thank you for tuning in to the show at this very moment. Many of you, if not most of you, are making your transition from your part-time jobs where you generate an income to your full-time jobs where you cultivate an outcome. And as you do so, I want to remind you to do it with intentionality. Yes, I'm the host of the program, joined by the real J Mac, producer extraordinaire, often imitated, never duplicated. But I remind you daily about the transition from your part-time jobs to your full-time jobs in an effort to recalibrate our thought processes so that we can place significance and importance where it rightly belongs. You know, our world works overtime to cause us to embrace the idea that what we do to generate income is what's full-time, not recognizing that outcome cultivation should be our continued and enduring commitment. Every believer is called to be a part of the Great Commission's execution. Being born again is something that God makes available to us, not merely for our own personal benefit. I know there is great personal benefit, of course. But if the Lord has saved you and you're still breathing his oxygen on this side of eternity, that reality exists because he expects you and me to be a part of his remnant of commission fulfillers. That's just the simple truth. And so we must commit ourselves to endeavoring to fulfill that function on a regular and a daily basis. Income generating is an important function that we have. You know, I'm a father. I keep saying this. I have six children. Man, y'all won't believe this. All six of them jokers eat every day. They eat every day. They don't take breaks. I was telling them the other day, hey, this is an off day for your stomach. This, you know, like the NBA, this, what we call load management. Your tummy needs some load management. They go, Daddy. Now, y'all know I'm playing. But the income generation is a vital component of what we do, but it is not synonymous with our identities. And if we allow that to encroach upon our mentality, we could be twisted into a wrong way of thinking. Simply put, what goes on in your house is far more important than what goes on in the White House, guys. That's the facts. What goes on in your house is more important. Not because the things that happen in the White House are unimportant. No, they are important, but you and I are not directly engaged and involved in those. Consequently, we are not directly responsible for all of the decisions that are done at that level. But guess what we are directly responsible for? What happens in our homes? So as you are making your transition, I invite you to embrace my admonishment. You literally have the opportunity to form the future. You literally have the opportunity to shape our national future. You have an opportunity to participate in that. And so I would encourage you to take it seriously and respond appropriately. Now, I want to have a conversation today because several things that are happening all around the world, the end of the war in Gaza, only to be followed by Hamas, not immediately putting the weapons down, but exacting revenge on people who they deem to be traitors, because you had some brave Gazans who would dare stand up against the brutality of the murderous terrorists that are Hamas. But then we had things happening in our own country, and you know, sometimes people don't get into the details, but it's important to note that Hamas was the Shiite front for Iran. That is the particular Islamist ideology that the Iranians adhere to. And Hamas was funded and trained by Iran. They were the Shiite presence that terrorized Israel. And while that is happening, right, while that was happening right in our own country, you had the mayor of Dearborn, Michigan, to tell a Christian resident and citizen that he wasn't welcome. What is happening in our own country? We had Operation Twin Shield that was just executed in the St. Paul, Minneapolis area that resulted in evidence, according to the reports, that nearly 50% of all migrants in the area had committed some form of immigration fraud. There they are considering electing a Muslim mayor. Y'all know I called the Minneapolis O, Omar Fateh. You have Zoran Mamdanian in New York. New Yorkers are considering him to be the next mayor. These things are happening in our own show. What's going on here? And I want to be specific in what I'm talking about. This is the same Zoran Mamdani. I played a clip this week where he refused to call for Hamas to lay down their arms. Although he had no problem tweeting that Americans needed to be deprived of the right to keep and bear arms. All Americans, all guns should be banned in all America. That's what he tweeted in 2022. He had no problem calling for Americans to lay down their arms, but had a problem saying Hamas should. What is going on? To the word of God we go. First Chronicles chapter 12. This is the scripture that kind of frames my thought on this point. First Chronicles chapter 12, verses 32 and 33. We've talked about this passage before. This is at a pivotal time in Israel's history. This text comes to us at a pivotal time in Israel's history. And I feel like I sneeze every day, every time I come on the air. This is at the time where Israel literally had to decide whether or not they were going to follow the will of God, frankly, and have David as king over all of Israel, or whether they would continue in a divided fashion, because at this juncture you had the northern tribes, if you will, that were loyal to the house of Saul initially. And then you had Judah and southern tribes that were loyal to David. But it came to a point to where they were potentially about to go into civil war to determine who actually would be Israel's king prospectively. And that is the context and backdrop that this passage, that these two verses come to us from in 1 Chronicles chapter 12, verses 32 and 33. That is where we get the text that reads, of Issachar, men who had understanding of the times, to know what Israel ought to do, 200 chiefs and all their kinsmen under their command. Of Zebulun, 50,000 seasoned troops, equipped for battle with all the weapons of war, to help David with singleness of purpose. I could throw in there, look at verse 31. Where it says, of the half-tribe of Manasseh, 18,000 who were expressly named to come and make David king. You see, this is the backdrop of the passage that we're discussing. But it says, of Issachar, there were men who had understanding of the times. So that's one component. Men who had understandings of the times. And you have the second component. And to know what Israel ought to do. This passage provoked my thinking in this regard. Do we truly understand the times that we're living in currently? Really, do we understand the times that we're living in? Do we recognize what's going on? Do we recognize how we got here? Do we understand the various ideologies that were proliferated by men who have long been dead now? You know, there are several books, Seven Men Who Rule the World from the Grave. You know, 21 men who rule the world from the grave, these ideologies. This is why the scripture says that we cast down vain imaginations. Well, first it says the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but they're mighty. They're divinely powerful to the pulling down of the stronghold, pulling down of strongholds, casting down vain imaginations, vain logismos that would dare erect itself against the knowledge of Christ. Pernicious ideology continues to bear rotten fruit. Do we understand, you know, the economic philosophies of people like John Maynard Keynes? And we talk a lot on this program about Moses, Mordecai, Marx, Levy, but he's not the only one. You know, you have the ideologies of the Huxley brothers, you know, Aldous Huxley, you know, the George Orwell was another's pen name. Do we understand these ideologies? There is a pernicious effort that is certainly discussed in the terrorist realms about using America's liberties against us to infiltrate our own nation. And how do you get to a place where you have a city, according to the data we have, that as of 2023, the majority of the residents in Dearborn, Michigan are Muslim? How do you get to a place where you have a mayor who would tell a Christian resident and citizen that they're not welcome because this Christian citizen and resident had the audacity to say, you know what, I don't really like us renaming this street in the name of this journalist who celebrates terrorism. I don't think that's consistent with American values. I don't think that's something that I support. That's certainly not something that I support. And in response to that statement in a public setting, the mayor says, you are not welcome here. When you move, not if, when you move, I'm going to throw a parade to celebrate your moving. Do we understand the times that we're living in? Do we understand the times? I talked about the genocide that's happening in Nigeria that's been happening since 2009. Do you realize Boko Haram is attempting to establish a caliphate in Africa currently? That the murder that is taking place, over 100,000 people have been killed from 2009 up to about August of 2025. In 2025 alone, as of August, from January to August, over 7,000 Christians murdered for no reason other than the fact that they're Christian. Another 7,000 displaced. Move from their homes. If you think about the coalescing of these details, guys, how long will it be before we have to ask questions about those types of things happening in our own country? Will we allow that to happen? You know, I'm not a Michigan resident, so I had to look it up. But Dearborn, Michigan is right outside of Detroit. It's about a 20 minute drive or so, depending on traffic and things of that nature, outside of Detroit. 20 some odd miles away. What is happening to our country? And I am greatly concerned that we have kind of conditioned ourselves to look for political, judicial, and legal responses to issues that are transpiring in our country, but we're not recognizing what God requires his church to do. The Lord said the church is the pillar and ground of truth. We have a vital role to play in contributing to and creating the type of culture that is in our country. When I say we, I'm talking about Christ followers. But what is largely happening is a deficiency in the Great Commission being executed, unfortunately. I pray that the Lord would grace us with men who understand the times that we're living in. But not only that, but would know what we ought to do. Anchored by the love of God, eternity-based, and biblically fortified to engage for his glory.
As Christians, we're called to be salt and light to the world, to seek justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with our God. One of the simplest but most powerful ways we can live out our faith in public life is by voting. Whether it's local school boards or national leaders, the people we elect shape our communities and determine our future. iVoterGuide.com is committed to providing you with information you can trust. Your values and your vote make a difference. Vote wisely. Use iVoterGuide.com.
Shining light into the darkness, this is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. Abraham Hamilton III here. I'm delighted to have on the program with me a guest who is a friend, a brother in the faith, a man of God, a bold warrior for Christ, willing to say the hard things, man, and to take the slings that flow from that. I'm speaking none other than my brother Israel Wayne, who is an author, a conference speaker, who has a passion for defending the Christian faith and promoting a biblical worldview. He is the site editor for ChristianWorldview.net and the founder of Family Renewal. And of his books, I just want to mention several of the books that he's written that have been blessings to untold thousands, if not more people, but my family in particular. Questions God Asks is one of his books. Questions Jesus Asks is one of his books, another one. Pitching a Fit, Overcoming Angry and Stressed Out Parenting is another book. Education, Does God Have an Opinion is another book. Tremendous blessing. I've recommended that book to our audience here numerous times before. Another, Answers for Homeschooling, Top 25 Questions Critics Ask is another one of his books. Raising Them Up, Parenting for Christians is another book he's written. Foundations in Faith is another book. It's one of the books that we've used to help to communicate a biblical worldview to our own children. When I say we, I'm talking about Maria and myself, for our family. He's also written Foundational Truths, which is a wonderful, wonderful book. It's a modern catechism that will aid you in establishing your children in the Christian faith and rearing them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And among all of those things, my brother is also a resident of the state of Michigan. Israel Wayne, thank you for joining me here on the program.
Abe, it's always great to talk with you. I always enjoy it. Thank you.
Oh, man. It's a pleasure for me. It's always encouraging and strengthening, convicting. It's helpful all along. So I love to have you on as often as I can. I wanted to have you on in particular because I've been, you know, stirred and troubled by things that are happening. Like you have the end of the war in Israel, in Gaza, that was announced, but that immediately was followed by Hamas coming out of the tunnels and executing people who they say were collaborators, you know, with Israel. And I thought there was supposed to be ceasing fire, but their fire has continued thereafter. You know, you have the right now, and a lot of people are talking about New York City, but you have, I call him Minneapolis, Omar Fatah, who's running for mayor in the Twin Cities area that came on the back of Operation Twin Shield, to where, based upon the reports by federal law enforcement officials there, nearly half of the migrants in the area were alleged perpetrators of immigration fraud. And then you have, and I'm about to play a clip of this, the recent issue in Dearborn, Michigan, where the mayor told a citizen who is purportedly a Christian, that because he dare publicly object to naming of streets after Osama Siblani, who was a reporter and others who, according to the public information, that he kind of supports terrorism. And the citizen's like, I don't think we should name streets after this kind of guy. And the mayor, Dearborn's mayor, said, you are not welcome in this city. These kind of things have been percolating in my heart. And while we're watching, for example, the genocide that's transpiring right now in Nigeria, where over 100,000 Christians have been killed since 2009 up to August of this year, these things are kind of coalescing in my mind and my heart. It's like, what is going on? There are things happening internationally, but there are things happening domestically. I want to first start our conversation by getting you to react to this clip of Dearborn's mayor telling Ted Barham that he's not welcome in the city. Clip one, Jeff. Go.
I mean, Hezbollah, bombed the embassy in Beirut, and including many Americans. So I just feel it's quite inappropriate.
You're an Islamophobe. And although you live here, I want you to know, as mayor, you're not welcome here. And the day you move out of the city will be the day that I launch a parade celebrating the fact that you moved out of the city, because you are not somebody who believes in coexistence.
Wow. I mean, as a Christian, as a father, husband, and as a citizen of the state of Michigan, what's your reaction to that video, man?
That didn't sound too tolerant. That didn't sound like coexist to me. I don't hear. I bet that guy doesn't have a coexist bumper sticker. That's Mayor Abdullah Hamud there of Dearborn. And, you know, for people who don't know, Dearborn is the western suburb of Detroit. It's just a little ways outside of downtown. And it's one of the first suburbs that you come to if you head west out of Detroit, and has really had a long history of becoming Islamic. And today is on par, as far as population density of being, getting close to the same kind of Muslim population of some of the Islamic countries in the Middle East. And so it really is an amazing situation there. But increasingly, they're making it clear that Christians are not welcome in Dearborn, at least not Bible-believing evangelical Christians who will speak out about their faith.
I want to dig into that a little bit. And as what you can answer, I'm not asking you to do anything beyond what you have available and accessible to you. But when you say Bible-believing evangelical Christians that will actually believe, that actually believe the Bible and willing to and obey the Bible, they're increasingly unwelcome in Dearborn. How has that been demonstrated?
Yeah, well, you have these ecumenical churches, that are kind of the typical leadership that you find in a lot of these ecumenical city gatherings, where you have the imam and the Orthodox leaders and the Roman Catholic priest, and they all sit up there and shake hands and talk about peace and love and, all that kind of stuff. Those kinds of things are allowed, and they're allowed to exist in Dearborn as long as everybody keeps their faith very private. But historically in Dearborn, within the last 15 years, if you go into the city evangelizing and proselytizing, as they call it, sharing your faith publicly, especially at Islamic events, there's videos that you can search on YouTube and just type in Dearborn, Michigan, stoning, and you will see Christian evangelists who have been attempted to be stoned to death by mobs in Dearborn. And when the police come in, they basically threaten and warn the Christians to stay out of the city and to stop going in there evangelizing, because they know they're outnumbered, right? And so there's kind of a long history of how Islam has grown, and I'd be glad to get into that a little bit with the city of Dearborn. But it's gotten to the point now where, 55% of the population of Dearborn is Muslim. And so the police have kind of allowed the city Muslims to kind of regulate their own culture there. And so as long as they're kind of regulating the streets, the police kind of step back and allow that to happen. And so, yeah, if you go in there, especially at a Muslim Holy Week or something like that, you're very likely going to be arrested, partly for your own safety, but warned not to go back in.
I do want to get into that. I mean, because we've heard about these, Islamic no-go zones in the cities in the UK, in certain cities in the UK. We've heard of those things. But for many people who are watching and listening now, this is the first they've ever heard of having an American city that has become a no-go zone for Christians, that there is a place in the land of the free and the home of the brave where Christians can't go and share their faith. Would you share with us a bit about basically the Islamicization of Dearborn, and including really as much as we can the particular theological inclination of the kind of Shiite presence in the city?
Yeah, so it really goes back to Henry Ford, who built the automobile. So he first established his first manufacturing plant in Detroit in Dearborn area about 1903, started building the Model T in 1908. World War I was about 1914 to 1918. And in 1914, he established a $5 a day hiring policy where you could come work for him for $5 a day. That was a lot of money back in the beginning of World War One, and people were not doing well economically. And so that was a big draw. And that's when people first started coming from the Middle East. A lot of Arabs began moving to work for Henry Ford in Dearborn. The thing that's kind of a sad part of the history that a lot of people don't know is that Henry Ford was a very outspoken anti-Semite. In fact, the year the World War One ended in 1918, he bought a Dearborn newspaper called the Dearborn Independent. And from 1918 to like 1927, he ran that publication. They got sued for libel in 27, had to shut down. But particularly in like 1920 to 1922, he ran a series of anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic articles that were talking about the international Jewish problem. And this is not conspiracy theory. This is widely acknowledged. In fact, if you look at the Henry Ford Museum, which is in Detroit, their website has a whole article about it. Like, they're very public about this is kind of a sad part of his history that people don't know. And so this anti-Semitic culture that he created, where he would try not to hire Jews, he would discriminate against them in the employment process, created a culture within Dearborn that was conducive to being anti-Semitic. In fact, even the Nazis in 1938 gave Henry Ford an award for being, you know, this forward-thinking person and so forth. So there's kind of a sordid anti-Semitic basis for why so many of these Arabs came to the Detroit area. But of course, you know, they're looking for jobs. There was a lot of unrest, you know, in different places, a lot of internal, even Islamic civil war that's happening in different countries. 1938 was when they built the first Islamic center in Dearborn. And that Islamic presence has spread really rapidly, even in the last 30 years, to where now in the Detroit metro area, there's at least 55 different Islamic centers and mosques in the Detroit metro area. So it is increasingly dominant, you know, and you had these waves of immigration that came in 1967 when the Israeli-Palestinian conflict happened. There was like a Lebanese civil war. You had, you know, these different waves of immigration that took place. 1975, there was a Lebanese civil war. But then another thing that happened during the 60s and 70s, particularly the 70s, is as manufacturing began to cool, you have what's called white flight from the city of Detroit, where white Caucasian families left downtown, inner city Detroit, went to a lot of the northern, somewhat western suburbs, and settled in the cities. And so in the 1970s moving forward, that created a situation where you had gangs that began to form in Detroit. And so people became very concerned about gang warfare, that type of thing. 1990, the first city council, Arabic city councilwoman, was elected in Dearborn. And so they started to actually get a voice in the government starting in 1990. And it was really the 1990s, the 2000s was when the gang activity was probably the strongest. And increasingly, it's hard to say this out loud, because there's two narratives. There's the official narrative that you look up, and then there's the Michigan narrative. So when you live in Michigan and you talk to people in Michigan, and we kind of know how things go, you know, you'll get a narrative. But then if you go look at the filtered narrative through the media, you get a different narrative. So,
well, we want the real Michigan narrative.
There's the Michigan narrative. If you ask Google, is there Sharia law in Dearborn, Michigan? It will say no. There is no kind of Sharia law that happens in Dearborn, Michigan. In many ways, that's true. But there is an increasingly functional type of Sharia law that happens that's not official. So an example of this would be that as of this month, as of October 2025, you get 5 calls to prayer per day in Dearborn over the mega speakers, the loudspeakers at these Islamic centers. And the first one starts at 5:30 a.m.
We played audio of citizens in the area complaining about it violating the noise ordinances.
And it does violate the noise ordinance from 10 o'clock p.m., 7 o'clock a.m. You are not supposed to have any kind of noise. So during the day, there's questions about decibel level. Is it too loud? You know, some of that's questionable. But this 5:30 a.m., complete violation of city ordinance. No questions about it. And yet it happens. And that's what I'm saying. There's a functional Sharia that happens in Dearborn. You know, the aspect of, you know, if you Google and say, are Christians being arrested for evangelizing in Dearborn? Google's going to tell you no. Functionally, yeah, it happens. And so there's a sense in which they have increasingly gained power, and crime, particularly gang crime, dropped really dramatically in like the 2010s and forward. In fact, I've read some articles that say that they have violent crime that's decreased at about a 7% per year rate in recent years in Dearborn. Why is that? Well, that's because the Muslims are policing themselves. And the official police kind of step back and they let the powers that be, the Muslim powers that be in the city, kind of police themselves. And so Dearborn in the 2010s and 2020s, they start pushing the gang activity back into downtown Detroit. And so it became something that was a bit of a handshake deal, if you will. Again, this is not official. You're not going to find any official publications that tell you this. I'm just saying this is Michigan word on the street. When you live here, you know how this goes down, that they're basically like, hey, look at the results. You know, city crime's gone down, gang activity's gone down. Dearborn is within its own structure, its own kind of Islamic structure. It's kind of policing that they're policing their own streets.
Let me break in here because the disrespectful music is started. We have to take a break. But what you're describing is a de facto Sharia as opposed to a de jure Sharia.
Correct.
And that the handshake deal is, well, you guys got rid of the gangs, so we'll kind of let you run your own kind of Islamic fiefdom, and we'll wink and we'll nod. It's not official Sharia, but as you said, it's a functional Sharia. And Michiganders understand that.
I'm very concerned about the current young adult Christian fiction genre. I read or started reading over 24 Christian YA novels. Many never mentioned Jesus, and many had empty or confusing Christian allegories. How can we offer our children real hope when we are simply repackaging what the world offers? Let's look to our Creator God to help us write better stories. Find the full article, Read 'em and Weep, by me, Joy Lucius, on thestand.net.
The Hamilton Quarter podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net. Back to the Hamilton Quarter on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. Abraham Hamilton III here. My guest is Israel Wayne, author, conference speaker, founder of Family Renewal. You can find his books, his speaking schedule. You can find all of that information at familyrenewal.org. You can also find his speaking schedule in particular by going to israelwayne.com. This brother is a blessing to the body of Christ. Before we went to the break, Israel, you were sharing that you have the official narrative, but people who live in Michigan, they know that what's happening in Dearborn, for example, is nowhere near what the official narrative is. So I want to invite you to continue your explanation in that regard.
Yeah, well, there's another city on the east side of Detroit. So if you leave Detroit proper and you go east, like one of the first cities that you run into is a little town called Hamtramck. Mm-hmm. It's only 20,000 population. You know, Dearborn's about 105,000 today, something like that. So it's much smaller. But they estimate that the Islamic population of Hamtramck might actually be up to 60%. Wow. You know, whereas Dearborn's about 55%. Hamtramck, because they have these Bangladeshi and Yemeni immigrants that have moved there, might be 60%. And so an example of kind of a soft Sharia is if you go to downtown Hamtramck, you're not going to find Burger King and Wendy's and these kind of food establishments. It's halal food.
Yeah.
So Islamic law approved foods that don't include pork and so forth. those are the businesses that are going to be able to thrive in the area because of the population that they serve. And so what happens is culturally, there's a functional type of Islam and Sharia that begins to pervade. And so they often talk about how Detroit is a great melting pot. But I'll tell you what, there are these imams who are not tolerant. I will say this, we should be very careful to say this. A lot of people fled to the Detroit area to flee Islamic persecution. You know, they lived in these places where they lived under that totalitarian regime of Islamofascism.
Kind of like Hamas.
They didn't like it. They didn't like it. They didn't want it. They got away from it, right? But there are a lot of imams who have this extremist rhetoric. In fact, in September, there was this rally that happened in Dearborn where, you know, 40,000 people got together to celebrate an Islamic festival. And there were chants last year at a festival of death to Israel, death to America in 2024. And, you know, there's this extremist rhetoric that goes out at some of these very large Islamic gatherings. And the imams will not only not condemn it, they sort of tacitly support it. And some of them very openly and overtly support it. And so it's scary, you know, when you see 40,000 people gathered and they're angry and they're shouting, you know, death to America, death to Israel. Within our own American soil, that becomes very disturbing. It's very problematic.
And that's why I wanted to have this conversation. Because I've had people on, I forgot the sister's name. She's been on the show. She often talks about it doesn't take a majority to be terrorists. You know, it doesn't take a majority. Right. It's always the minority that pushes in that particular direction. And you have like the effort to establish like Epic City in North Dallas that they've come right outright. This is they want this to be a Muslim city, a Muslim neighborhood. And you have, you know, Governor Abbott in Texas stepping in at a relatively late stage in that development. But it is concerning when you see what's happening contemporarily. And then if you have any awareness of studying history, when you see, well, when you have a kind of a Muslim population established, it's peaceful initially, but there's a progression that is kind of a radicalization progression. And then next thing you know, there's a Hamas-type effort happening in a locale. And so my concern is, are we witnessing a similar phenomenon happening right here in our own nation?
We are.
You mentioned Dearborn. We mentioned Hamtramck.
We are. Minneapolis, absolutely, all of it. Yeah, and you know, you look at Detroit, they have 15 to 20 Islamic schools for K-12. And in these schools, I mean, they are teaching Islamic religion, culture, and the influence of evangelical Christians is just diminishing and diminishing. I mean, there are only a handful more evangelical Christian schools in the Detroit suburbs and Detroit area than there are Islamic K-12 schools. And so, you know, these are immensely problematic issues.
Wow. Wow. Something we have not touched on yet, and if you want to go here now, what is the influence of the Nation of Islam in this area?
Yeah, so they have their annual Savior's Day convention often in Detroit. The last one in 2024 had over 20,000 attendants. And what I think a lot of blacks don't understand about Nation of Islam is that Islam traditionally is not the friend of the black person. For a lot of African Americans, they've never studied the Arabic slave trade.
Yeah.
And you can just Google that and you'll be surprised the history you didn't get in the public school.
Well, it's a fact that the European slave traders learned the trade from the Arab slave traders. I mean, it is a fact that is the trans-Saharan slave trade is what precipitated the transatlantic slave trade. That's an objective fact of history.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it was much more brutal. The Arabic slave trade was far more brutal than the European slave trade. You know, not that any slavery is good, right? But comparatively, it was worse. And so these black Americans are being co-opted by the Nation of Islam and believing that somehow Islamic is fundamentally sympathetic to black people. It is not.
It's not true.
It is absolutely completely false. And so Louis Farrakhan and Nation of Islam, why they've succeeded in Detroit is because of the failure of the black church in Detroit to be masculine. I just said that on the radio.
Unpack that for us, Israel.
But basically what's happened is you have an emasculated, prosperity gospel-driven church, you know, in Detroit. I'm not saying every church, but I'm saying on the average. Young men don't want to join those churches full of grandmas and mamas. There's nothing masculine or male about it. And so what they've seen in the Nation of Islam is they've seen a culture where they're taught respect, they're taught discipline, they're taught order, regimentation, and it appeals to a lot of the young black males. And so Nation of Islam has been very successful in cities like Detroit, Indianapolis, other places like that. And so they have been growing, whereas the American evangelical black church has been decreasing. And it's because we have gotten away from the gospel and have preached a soft gospel or a prosperity gospel that is not selling to young males today. And you know, we have seen the breakdown of the black family in Detroit. And so you don't have strong father-led family culture that is, you know, one of the strongest pushbacks against gang activity, incarceration, all of those kinds of things. And the American Christian church has not been the prophetic voice that we've needed to be, calling men to manhood. And so things have come in and filled that void. And unfortunately, you know, you have whole generations of black Americans who have been targeted by groups like Planned Parenthood, you know, just trying to kill off the black culture. And you've done shows on Margaret Sanger before, the eugenics movement. That was an intentional part of Planned Parenthood, was killing off black families. And so, you know, the solution to this is that we have to have a return, of course, to biblical Christianity, to biblical family structure, and getting families to be, you know, solidified so that we teach our children the truth and don't just keep having our Christian children converting over to Islam because it looks cool.
And I know you personally, so I know your heart. So when you say things like the black church, you know as well as I know, there's no black church or white church, but you're talking about the Church of the Living God in these urban areas that's predominantly populated, you know, by you know, Americans of African ancestry. You know,
that's right.
That's just the reality. You know, and one of the major—
And there's some good ones.
There's
some good ones. So I want to be clear about that. I won't get phone calls from my friends in Detroit who say, hey, you just threw us under the bus. I wasn't talking about you.
But it's the hit dogs that holler. You mentioned about, and this is something that's infecting and affecting the body of Christ at large in every demographic, really, the unwillingness to embrace God's design for the family. One of the major things is fertility rates. You know, that we've talked about on this show, the demographic winter is exemplified by what's happening in Europe and in Japan. But the same phenomenon is happening here. Would you just speak a bit to, frankly, a rejection of a biblical worldview as it pertains to God's view of family and children in particular?
Yeah, when you look at the fertility rate in the United States as of 2024, it's 1.6. You have to have a 2.1 to sustain your population. It's the lowest fertility rate we've ever had in the United States. And you look among different demographic groups, among white, Caucasian, non-Hispanic women, it's like 1.56, so it's lower than that. When you look at Muslim women in the United States, it's about 2.2. Internationally, Muslim women are about 2.9, 3.1. And so Muslims are outpopulating other demographic groups. Hispanic, Latino birth rates are going down all around the world. But in the United States, there's so much emphasis from UNESCO and UN on population control. They've really targeted a lot of Latin America countries, so population's going down there. But Islam is growing, and they know that population is a big part of how they grow their religion. So evangelical Christians have been part of the problem in slowing their birth rate. Now, thank God, I think that it's about a 2.2 birth rate among evangelical Christian women, but still that's just like, what, that much above the sustainability rate? And so, you know, we need to see, again, all Christian families adhering to a biblical worldview as it relates to family structure and family culture. And churches are made up of families, but churches call families to be families. You know, mm-hmm. Churches teach families how to disciple their children, or they're supposed to. And in general, the American church hasn't done that, and we're reaping the negative consequences of that.
Yeah, I've talked about it before. One of the strangest things, and it still happens, that, you know, as I travel with my wife and children, you know, you've met my wife, you've seen, met my children. People want to segregate me from my children. You know, you sure you want to bring your children? I'm like, yes, I love my children, and I want to worship the Lord with my children present. You know, and it's like, oh, you sure you want to do that? And it's like, yes. That it's like a radical concept to say, listen, the Bible teaches that it's my job as my children's father to lead in evangelizing and discipling my own children. And the gasps I still get in different places are like, oh, are you serious? Yes. But the lack of understanding that has contributed, in my view, to this kind of chasm that it seems an Islamic disposition is seemingly infiltrating and supplanting here in our own nation.
Yeah. And when you think about what sells right now among young males, in particular in the United States, we have a resurgence of interest in Christianity among young Gen Z males. They want to get married. They want to have children. They're starting to go back to church. They have an interest in Christianity. It's growing among Gen Z males. It's decreasing, mm-hmm. unfortunately, among Gen Z females, which is sad. But these young men, they want something masculine. And so we have to represent to this culture a masculine Christianity, which Christianity is respectful of women. It is probably, it elevates women more than any other religion in the world. So it's not at the exclusion of women, but it's simply saying we need masculine women masculine men so that we can protect our women.
Yeah, I don't think we need masculine women.
Yeah, we don't need masculine women. We need masculine men so that we can protect our women and so that we can protect our families and help them to thrive. And I think the American church has been afraid to say that. Mm. And, you know, we've seen and again, going back to Detroit, I mean, the white evangelical churches fled to the suburbs and abandoned the city, abandoned it. And they don't go down there and they don't reach out and they're not missional and they're not evangelistic. They are comfortably secluded in their very wealthy, upper middle class suburban churches where they sing to the choir. You know, and the church as a whole has to do better. We have just not, as a church, represented Christ well in the city of Detroit. And Islam, you know, they have filled that void. And that's to our shame. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have, I think, the American church to blame for that. You know, both the suburban and urban churches have really failed there in different ways.
So in sum, the only way forward really is to get back to Bible basics. Used to be viewed as probably exclusively a foreign mission phenomenon, we now have a domestic application in places like you mentioned, Dearborn and Hamtramck and Minneapolis and St. Paul and Indianapolis and urban areas across the country for sure. It seems simple, but that doesn't make it easy. Did I oversimplify the remedy?
Well, Brother Andrew, who wrote the book God Smuggler, I heard him speak before he died, and he said, God will not allow this generation of Muslims to be unevangelized. You can either go to them or God will bring them to you. And he says, if God brings it to you, you may not like how that looks in terms of how it changes your culture, but we have an opportunity, right? Mm.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.